KUOW podcasts are made possible by listener support. Become a new or renewing member today at KUOW.org.
In times of plenty and in times of hardship, the United States and the United Kingdom have shared a special relationship. We've stood tall and strong, and together we've faced some of the greatest challenges this world has known.
In addition to telemarketers, Congress has a lower approval rating than Lindsay Lohan. That's bad.
They say it's a place where acceptance, patience, teamwork, and talent meet hard work, artistry, and just plain old fun. It's a place where you can belong and where you can grow.
Today on the program, we're gonna run the gamut. That's live music from the Roosevelt High School Jazz Band. And you just heard Scott Brown there, the director, talking about what that jazz band is all about. We're going to hear music from them all this hour live in our performance studio. And we'll talk to Scott Brown a little later. You also heard President Obama talking about the special relationship between the United States and the United Kingdom. We're going to talk to the Consul General for the West Coast and the Northwest, Priya Guha. She's going to join us. Priya Guha is going to join us at about 9:20. But first, you heard Karen Porterfield. She is running for Congress in Washington's 8th District as a Democrat. She is running against the incumbent, Congressman Dave Reichert. She joins us in our studio. Thank you for being here.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
I'm glad you're here. I want to say that we tried on a number of occasions to have Dave Reichert either come in separately or join us. The Dave Reichert campaign declined our invitations many times. I'm glad you're here. What's your background?
Well, my background is community development, 13 years with the Salvation Army, then several years with United Way. And for the last 10 years, I have taught at Seattle University in their Master's of Public Administration program and also worked as a management consultant.
What were you working on at Seattle University? What was your focus in those classes?
Complex organizational management, nonprofit management, lean processing, all of the things that makes the business of government and nonprofits effective.
And your students, who are they?
Mid-career professionals. I'm teaching a class this quarter in human resources for line managers, since we're seeing a flattening out in many of our organizations.
You're doing that while you're campaigning?
I am. You have to keep the health care benefits.
Well, there you go. Well, if you were a Congress member, you wouldn't have that problem. What prompted you to take on, if I may put a little of my own spin on this,
a
losing battle to take on Dave Reichert in an 8th district that has been rejiggered so it's more, it's even more safe for Dave Reichert?
Well, I don't see it as a losing battle. I don't need to have sacrificial lamb on my resume. And we did some thoughtful polling before I got into the race. And what we found with this new 8th congressional district, there's really only a difference of about 600 voters more who register as strong Republicans. And when we did a general poll and asked people to self-identify, what we found was 41% of likely voters said they were Democrat, 39% said they were Republican, and 20% said independent, which is reflecting the way that the country is going, growing independent voters.
Karen Porterfield is running as a Democrat in the 8th district. So I find the 8th to be a fascinating map to look at. You have Auburn, Bonnie Lake, Maple Valley, Issaquah, North Bend, Edenclaw on this side.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the other side, and this is what makes it a unique district, it goes over the mountains, and it's Clay Ellum, Ellensburg, Vantage, Wenatchee. You have Wenatchee in your district.
I do.
You have Chelan in that district.
Yep.
What do the folks in Chelan or Ellensburg want that maybe the folks on the east, on the west side, Edenclaw, Maple Valley, Auburn, are not thinking about?
Actually, they think about more of the same things. We have agriculture as our main industry in this district. We have significant agriculture over here, as well as on the east side. I now know more about hay than I ever thought I would coming out of Kittitas County.
What does a Congress member have to do with hay?
We don't want to raise it.
What are the hay policies in Congress?
Actually, the issues around hay, a majority of the hay comes out of the Kittitas Valley and is exported, as is most of our agricultural products. So agriculture is important. Export policies are important. Tariff issues, currency, all of those come together in supporting a very large industry.
Where do you differ with Dave Reichert on the questions of these agricultural questions?
Number one, we should have had the agriculture bill come to the floor for a vote, and it did not in the House, which is a significant impact.
Do you think that's something he didn't want to have happen?
He serves on Ways and Means, and that is a leadership position, and the leadership did not bring it to the floor for debate or a vote. Also, immigration is important for the agriculture industry. Unlike what most people believe, it is a job that requires experience and knowledge, and we are short. When I was over in Wenatchee just last weekend, they were talking about the potential of up to 30% of the apple crop this year may not get harvested. They didn't have enough people to do it.
Well, let me take two of those things. Let me back you up. Before we go to immigration, what would you do? How would you recast the agriculture bill if you were able to be in the Congress? What would you do differently than it is today?
There's two things I think we need to be looking at. The first one is we need to be looking for ways to allow people to get into farming and orcharding. It is challenging. It is a high upfront cost to purchase land. And we have a new generation who's trying to get into that. I would expand that program, which is part of the agriculture bill. Two, I would also expand what they call the secondary market program, which allows for things such as support of farmers markets and expansion of those, which is a local food production connection that many of us have, and is also for people, say you're a cherry orchard, that you develop and become somebody who does cherry juice, so that you, instead of just exporting the raw product, you do the cherry pies and you create that secondary market.
Do you find interest in that among the farmers on the east side in the 8th District? Now, of course, there are many farmers on the east side who come to the west side for mm-hmm. the farmers markets, mm-hmm. and that has become a big part of there. But do you find interest in expanding that?
Actually, there is a lot of interest in expanding that, and you may not be aware of it, but any of us who've gone through McDonald's and have bought that package of pre-sliced apples for ourselves or our kids, well, the machine that slices those apples, that was developed in Wenatchee with support from the agriculture and the state, and has basically revolutionized and opened up a new market for apples. So we need to be looking at multiple ways that we bring healthy food into the world, actually into our world for access, and that we can look for ways that supports the farmers and the orchardists in developing their market.
And what kind of immigration package do you want to see passed? And how do you differ from Dave Reichert on that?
Well, there's two things. There's two issues we need to be addressing. The first one is the pathway to citizenship. I spoke with a man this summer when I was out campaigning. He has been working to become an American citizen for 11 years now. And during that time, he has not bought the house he'd like to for his family, and he desperately wants to start a business. And he can do neither because, as he says, he doesn't know if he's going to be able to stay. And the second one is we do need to have a worker program. Not everybody wants to come to this country and become a citizen. We should have pathways so that they can come in and work and go home.
Do you think that a Republican House is open to that? I mean, we've heard multiple conversations about immigration.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think a Republican House might be open to that, or do you think Dave Reichert is open to that?
In the debate that Dave and I had in Wenatchee, Dave basically said that the president's movement forward on the DREAM Act, he did not approve of. It should be a part of a comprehensive package, and that it should all be done at the same time. Well, what we know is when you're dealing with complex issues like this, if you're going to wait for everything to be done, you're going to wait forever. So it makes sense to look and take them on a piece-by-piece basis and basically build the program. And I think we should start with our worker program. That one is a fairly easy one to be able to solve.
So one of the things Dave Reichert talks about is free trade and supports free trade. He was involved in negotiating some free trade deals. Anything where you disagree with him on that? It's a free trade, and it is a trade-dependent state.
We are a trade-dependent state, and we do need to continue on focusing on developing our markets. The question is, where do you use free trade and where do you use fair trade? Because when you expand out and look at things from manufacturing and other industries, the use of tariffs can protect your home markets and allow you to factor in and develop markets overseas. So we need to be aware of the impact, the long-term impact that we have when we make these choices. We're the only country in the G20 group who does not have a manufacturing strategy overall for the country that includes tariffs and other ways to protect the local industries.
Well, the Mitt Romney and others say don't pick winners and losers, and government shouldn't be doing that. Would you try to pick winners and losers?
Winners and losers implies you may be choosing a particular company to win or lose. To have protection on industries does not necessarily say you are picking winners or losers. What it is saying is you are investing in your local communities and providing work for your people.
Who would you protect? I mean, one of the things that the Obama administration did was clamp down, put tariffs on imports of Chinese tires because they were upset that the Chinese tires were at such a low price. But for consumers, we didn't get cheap Chinese tires.
Nope.
We had to pay more for tires in America.
Well, actually, there are some things we can be doing without even having to look at tariffs that we could do pretty quickly. A good example is, and I know this because I've gotten federal contracts and also given them out from funding from projects I've done, that you are required by law to take the lowest bid. And you are not allowed to factor in such issues as tariffs. So two examples that I would give is when you are doing infrastructure development and you have a large project come in, say, for a bridge, you're not allowed to factor in the tariffs and the protection that the Chinese steel industry makes. So their steel is coming in cheaper than American steel. But if you were allowed to factor the tariffs in, you would see that American steel is the same cost as Chinese. So that it would make sense then to spend on the government side your government dollars to purchase the American steel, which provides additional jobs.
You know, Karen Porterfield is running in the 8th Congressional District against Congressman Dave Reichert. When the Seattle Times endorsed Dave Reichert back in July, they said Karen Porterfield would gain more should gain more legislative experience in lower level offices. What do you think of that?
Well, when people ask me why I'm starting here and why I'm running, and we have the conversations about other positions, two things come to mind. The first one is whether you've worked at a local level on a school board or you've been a state senator, one of the key skills you've had to learn is how to bring multiple competing groups to the table and find solutions. That is something that I've done my entire career, is working with communities, helping them figure out what they want to achieve and how to best spend their resources. And in many cases, that's finding a pathway that they can all agree on. Now, the process side, every group is different. How you do your work at a city council level, how you do it in Olympia, those are all different and unique. So whoever goes into Congress the first time, you're learning how Congress works. The issue is, do you have that ability to be able to bring together multiple groups and find solutions? So I don't feel that the fact that I have not had lower level experience is a barrier to my being effective in Congress.
Karen Porterfield is 8th District congressional candidate. She's running as Democrat against incumbent Congressman Dave Reichert, the Republican. We did extend a number of invitations to Dave Reichert. They were declined. I appreciate you coming in and talking to us.
Thank you. I can't believe the time went by so fast.
It flies.
It does.
It's because you deal with a cornucopia of issues, and they all come to a head. We are listening also to the live music from the Roosevelt High School Jazz Band, the award-winning Roosevelt Jazz Band, playing in our studios all this hour. A little later, we'll talk to Scott Brown, who directs that jazz band. This is Weekday.
Good morning, it's 9:20. You're tuned to 94.9 KUOW Seattle, news and information. In 1975, psychiatrist Raymond Moody coined the term near-death experience. He spent his entire career researching death and dying, with the goal of figuring out what happens after. His latest book is a memoir called Paranormal, My Life in Pursuit of the Afterlife. Raymond Moody is our guest this afternoon at 2:20.
Support for KUOW comes from Bellevue Arts Museum, presenting the BAM Biennial 2012 High Fiber Diet, featuring new works by more than 40 Northwest artists. This exhibit focuses on fiber art, both traditional and contemporary forms, now through February 24th. Details at bellevuearts.org.
We have cloudy skies in Seattle, 54 degrees right now in the U District. Working towards a high of 59 today, clouds and a chance of showers a little bit later. Clouds and rain expected tonight, the low near 51. Through the weekend, cloudy with a chance of showers. Tomorrow's high and Sunday's high in the upper 50s.
Roosevelt High School Jazz Band performing in our studios. We're going to hear a whole song from them a little bit later. We'll talk to Scott Brown, who's the director of that, and they're providing our interstitial music throughout this hour. By the way, that's Daniel Arthur on piano, Luke Woodall on the drums, Lise Romalier on the bass, Peter Romalier on alto sax, Storm D'Angelo on tenor sax, Noah Halpern on trumpet, and Scott Brown is down there directing as well. The UK economy got a boost last quarter from the Olympics and the Queen's Jubilee and her birthday. The Northwest has a special relationship with the UK, given the Pig War and Captain Cook's voyage into Puget Sound all those years ago. Consul General Priya Guha joins us to talk about that special relationship. She became Her Majesty's Consul General in San Francisco in August 2011. She's been a British diplomat since 1996. Prior to her posting in San Francisco, she worked in India on the Commonwealth Games, on Prime Minister Cameron's visit. She worked on EU issues, posted in Spain, San Francisco. Well, that's not bad.
It's not bad at all. It's great to be here.
Those are two pretty good postings. It's nice to see you. Thank you for being here. What do you call that when you're a consul general? Your territory extends up into the Northwest, right? All the Northwest from San Francisco north?
It does, absolutely. So from the consulate in San Francisco, we cover Northern California, Oregon, Idaho, Montana, Alaska, and last but very much not least, Washington.
Wow, that's an interesting combination. So you're in Idaho, you're in Montana, Alaska, different interests, different issues. What are the overriding same issues from the UK's perspective in those different and disparate areas?
Well, I think the one theme that runs through all the states we operate in, and indeed across the whole of the United States, is the strength of the relationship between the UK and the US. The relationship is so long-standing and covers all different areas of activity, from business relationships to university collaborations to cultural links. So all of those run through the states that we operate here in the Pacific Northwest as well.
In terms of business, what are the business relationships that you hear most about? I mean, when people are calling you up saying, I need help with X, Y, or Z, what are they calling about?
Well, actually, in Washington State, the British businesses have a whole range of investments here in Washington State. According to figures produced by the CBI in the UK, an independent business organization, we're actually the second biggest foreign investor in the state of Washington.
Really?
Supporting about 13,000 jobs.
So are you behind China? Who are you behind?
It's behind Germany, actually.
Behind Germany.
That's
right. Of course, because the Germans have all those big factories and... That's right.
So actually, you know, one of our big interests is in supporting British businesses who want to set up here in Washington State and making sure that they can get the right connections to Washington State companies and also make those businesses successful, which ultimately is great for the Washington economy as it is for the British economy.
What's the connection? What are the businesses that are most interested in setting up here?
Well, a whole range of businesses. Obviously, there's a lot linked to the aerospace industry. So we have Rolls-Royce, BAE Systems, AIM, all those companies which are linked to aerospace. But we also have large numbers of tech companies, big and small, and also other companies, for example, in the life sciences field, because all of those are obviously sectors that are strong here in Washington State as well.
Anything roiling the waters in those relationships?
You know, the relationships that we have on a business level with Washington State are great, and businesses that we speak to feel that the environment here is good to do business, and actually there's great talent and a great living environment. So actually we find people really keen to come here.
Okay, but you said in the business arena. So are there other arenas where it's not quite as, calm?
No, I must say with Washington State we have a great relationship. I talked earlier about university collaborations, and actually we do a lot with UW here. They're a great university, and we feel that there's lots of opportunities to collaborate, particularly on the area of scientific research between UW and the UK.
Priya Guha is the Consul General in San Francisco, serving the Northwest, Idaho, Montana, and Alaska as well. I want to ask you about the UK economy and politics, if I can. First of all, there was this growth in the UK economy after shrinkage because of the Olympics, because of the Jubilee. I've heard people say, well, you should just have the Olympics all the time, or perhaps celebrate the Queen's 61st, 62nd, 63rd. You know, what do you make of that economic growth? Do you also see it as being this sort of one shot, or is the economy stronger in the UK than it has been?
Well, I think you rightly point out that 2012 has been an amazing year in the UK with the Queen's Diamond Jubilee celebrations, which I hope people caught on television here locally.
Could we escape it?
But also...
Why you put the woman in the boat for so long, I don't know. It was raining.
It's good British stoicism, you see. And then also with the Olympics, which was just an amazing moment for us in the UK, and particularly for people who were able to attend in London. And it did provide a real boost to the British economy, but also more widely to the British public. I think everybody saw how pleased everybody was to see the celebrations going, and you saw a surge of great... parades of Union Jack flags and people cheering across the streets of London, which is something really nice to see from afar. But in terms of the economy, I mean, we feel that the economy is really getting back on track. And following a double-dip recession, which you rightly noted, we've had 1% growth in the last quarter. And we think that this shows that we're on the right track to steady and stable economic growth in the future.
How do you interpret the difference between the UK and Europe, the other part of Europe across the water, in their terms of their economic problems?
Well, the UK, as you know, is part of the European Union, but we're not part of the Eurozone, which is the group of 17 countries that have a common currency. And our belief is that the Eurozone countries are getting on track in terms of managing to deal with their challenging financial problems. And really, we want to see them getting to grips with those problems decisively and quickly, because ultimately it's both in our interests in the UK as a European Union member, and indeed for the global economy more widely, that the Eurozone gets its financial situation back on track.
Are they moving ahead?
Absolutely. There's been some pretty decisive steps taken in recent months, but we want to see continued progress, as do all of the global countries who are watching the situation closely.
What does that look like, continued progress?
Well, there's going to be some decisions taken over the next few months, which will hopefully make sure that there are systems in place to ensure that we can't go back to the difficult economic challenges that countries like Greece or Spain or indeed Italy or indeed Ireland faced. And what we want to see is that there are systems in place to avoid those situations being able to recur in the future, to give investors and indeed people who have a very strong trading relationship with the Eurozone countries the stability they need to continue those relationships.
How do you interpret the difference between the way Mr. Cameron responded and the European Union and the Eurozone responded to the first downfall, you know, in the 2009 recession, and then later when the Eurozone crisis emerged?
In the UK, we're not part of the Eurozone, so we have control over how we deal with our economic challenges. And what the British Prime Minister David Cameron decided to do when he came into power in the coalition government in 2010 was take a real grip on the economy, one by reducing the public sector debt and also challenging the status quo and making sure that we had things in place to encourage growth. Things like introducing tax credits for research and development, things like introducing a patent box, making sure our corporation tax is going to be the lowest in the whole of the G7 by 2014. So putting in place measures that will stimulate the growth that we've seen some of in the recent quarter.
Did he raise taxes in 2010?
No.
So he mostly tried to do it as through austerity, and he was criticized for that, wasn't he?
Austerity is never an easy thing to stomach, but I think what people have now seen is that the combination of what you call austerity, tighter public spend and reductions of public sector staff has actually had results. We've seen 1 million new private sector jobs created since the government came in 2010. And we've seen, obviously, the 1% of economic growth that you talked about earlier. So we think we're seeing results now.
The reason I ask is because, but some people are saying the 1% of growth happened in that quarter because you had the Olympics and the Jubilee, both of which was a lot of government spending. So do those go hand in hand?
Well, the government spending on the Olympics happened since actually the first construction started back in 2005. So we've seen a lot of spend related to the Olympics over many years.
But that was steady, no increase after 2010?
Well, what we've seen is absolutely a boost in the economy from the Olympics and from the Diamond Jubilee, not least through the millions of visitors who came to the UK to watch these great events. But we believe that actually the government has put the UK economy on track for steady and stable growth. And that's what we need in these challenging financial times.
What does the UK see from at the United States and the United States approach to the economy? And I know you're going to try to avoid getting into politics, but and in the two divergent views of dealing with the economy in the United States in the next few years.
Well, as you rightly note, it would not be for a foreigner's comment on what's going to happen in U.S. politics.
What are your concerns?
Well, I think, you know, everybody wants to see the global economy get back on track. The world is so interconnected that what happens in the U.S., what happens in India, what happens in China, what happens in the Eurozone, what happens in the U.K., all of those will have an effect on each other. So we all want to make sure that the economy gets back on track, that we can support each other's economies. And the role of people like me and indeed all my colleagues working for the British government here in the US is actually to support that through, in particular, encouraging a strong trade and investment relationship.
When you look at the UK itself, we have questions about the future of the UK. You may not be representing Scotland in a few years. What do you see happening in terms of the de-evolution of the United Kingdom?
Well, you may be aware that Prime Minister Cameron and the First Minister of Scotland, Alex Salmond, agreed just earlier this month the terms of a referendum on Scottish independence, which will happen in 2014. That referendum will be an in-and-out decision for the people of Scotland.
It's up or down. There's no middle ground.
Exactly. Right. And really, from this point onwards, it's up to the Scottish government to set out what they believe that means for the future of Scotland and for the Scottish people to take a decision based on that factual evidence when they go to the polls in 2014.
What do you think? Is it not for you to say as a diplomat?
Well, I really, you know, it's up to the people of Scotland. They're the ones who are going to be able to vote. And, you know, the government's position is that Scotland is better as part of the union. And obviously I represent that view locally. But it's for the Scottish people to decide.
There was some interim idea, right, that Scotland would be more independent, de-evolution, but there would still be a United Kingdom in terms of foreign policy and the like. That's not the case in this vote. This is an up or down vote.
So the vote will be absolutely a simple question. You're absolutely right. There were some discussions around what different questions might be. But ultimately, in the negotiations, they decided it's going to be an in or out vote.
Any discussion or suggestion that other parts of the United Kingdom will also want to weigh in on their own independence? Wales, I don't know, Cornwall.
The Scottish National Party came into power in elections a few years ago on the platform of committing to a referendum on independence. And so the fact that they got elected obviously reflected the will of the Scottish electorate, that they wanted to have the chance to have their say. There's no such swell of opinion in either Wales or Northern Ireland or Cornwall, as you say. So that's not really on the cards at the moment.
And just one last question in terms of foreign policy and that special relationship. The U.S. has shifted some of its focus to Asia and plans to shift more of its focus to Asia in the years ahead. And there is also talk that the U.S. has to make some changes in where they spend their defense dollars. Should the U.S. move more troops, if the U.S. moves more troops out of Europe, what would happen? Would the U.K. pick up the slack, or would there just be fewer armed troops on the continent and even in the U.K.? American, I should say.
I mean, every day, every month, every year, our military are collectively taking decisions about the best place to have their troops. And what you've seen over decades and indeed centuries is British troops and US troops fighting side by side. In all of the six recent major conflicts, British and American troops have been the ones standing shoulder to shoulder with each other. So we believe that actually that relationship is something that will continue in all of the years ahead. And we really value the close military relationship and indeed the contribution that your military and our military have made to the future security of our countries.
But if the U.S. shifts its forces more to Asia, would the U.K. or NATO troops increase forces in Europe or just keep it at the levels they're at now, do you think?
Well, I'm not party to the details of those discussions, obviously. But if the U.S. is making geopolitical decisions about where to place their armed forces, I suspect we're having similar conversations as well. So I wouldn't believe that we would feel that we would need to replicate where U.S. troops were. And probably we find ourselves making similar decisions in terms of where the strategic position of our forces need to be in the future as well.
All right. Priya Guha is Her Majesty's Consul General in San Francisco since August of 2011. Get some Northwest wild salmon from Alaska and here and compare it to what you get in Scotland, okay?
I will.
Thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Steve.
Here's a little more music from the Roosevelt High School Jazz Band. This is Weekday.
Cloudy skies in Seattle, 54 degrees right now in the University District. Working towards a high of 59, we're expecting clouds all day with a chance of showers a little bit later. Clouds and rain expected tonight, the low in the low 50s, cloudy with a chance of rain through the weekend. Tomorrow's high in the upper 50s.
Support for KUOW comes from AEG Live, presenting singer-songwriter Leonard Cohen on his Old Ideas World Tour. Leonard Cohen will be performing live at Key Arena on Friday, November 9th. Tickets are on sale now through Ticketmaster. More information at aeglive.com.
The weekend before the 2008 election, Andrew Kohut of the Pew Center made this prediction.
Our final estimate of the popular vote, if the election were being held today, would be 52% Obama, 46% McCain.
And that was precisely how the election turned out. I'm Guy Raz. Kohut's poll-based prediction for the 2012 race will be revealed next time on All Things Considered from NPR News.
And that's Weekend All Things Considered, Sunday evening at 5 o'clock.
Support for KUOW comes from UW Medicine, delivering primary and specialty care to patients at Harborview Medical Center, UW Medical Center, Northwest Hospital, Valley Medical Center, 9 UW Neighborhood Clinics, and Airlift Northwest. More information at uwmedicine.org.
Well, those are members of the Roosevelt High School Jazz Band performing in our studios. Daniel Arthur's on the piano. He's a senior at Roosevelt High School. Luke Woodall's on the drums, a sophomore at Roosevelt High School. Lise Ramele is a junior at Roosevelt High School. She's on the bass. Peter Ramele is a senior at Roosevelt High School. He's an alto sax player. Storm D'Angelo is on the tenor sax, senior as well. Noah Halpern's on the trumpet. And Scott Brown is the director of the Roosevelt High School Jazz Band. Thank you for being here.
Absolutely.
Thank you for waking these guys up and getting them here at 8 o'clock, though. I take the bus in sometimes, and at the 720 bus, there's a lot of high school students with a lot of musical instruments on the bus heading over to Roosevelt.
That's what we like to see.
They are, but it's great. It's great they're here. How long have you been doing this?
I've been at Roosevelt High School for 29 years.
Wow. And how long has there been the Roosevelt High School Jazz Band and you directing?
Well, I've directed the band for 29 years. It's
did
a great tradition.
Did you start with you, or was the...
Oh, no. Yeah. No. It goes back to a man named Waldo King, who directed the band in the 70s and 80s.
Wow. Why is it that... I love to ask this question, because I've asked it of Clarence Acox, I've asked of other people. Why is it that Roosevelt, Ballard now, Garfield, why is it we have such a great tradition of jazz playing, starting at the high school level in this town?
Well, I think that's a lot of it. It's a tradition that spans many years of strong jazz educators like Clarence, Waldo, John Mowat, Hal Sherman. So we've had that tradition of education, that tradition of swing. And now we have middle schools that are very bought into that, and they're feeding into these high schools.
We talked to some players from the Cafe Racer about a year ago.
Oh, yeah.
And also guys that were learning from kids, if I may, you know, from Roosevelt, but also they were learning from players across the city, players that had graduated from these programs decades before. So the tradition is fertilizing itself.
Absolutely. The racer scene is amazing. A lot of these students have played down there. My student teacher last year, Brennan Carter, he played there a lot. Of course, was very affected by the tragedies last spring. But it's a great connection for students at the UW under Kung Vu to connect with some students at Roosevelt High School and Nathan Hale Area High School. It's beautiful.
Yeah, it is. It's great. By the way, the Roosevelt and Ballard High School jazz bands perform as part of the Earshot Jazz Festival at Town Hall. That's tonight at 7. So there's another example. The Earshot Jazz Festival has kept people paying attention to this music, as well as KPLU as well. I heard somebody complaining in a review of a book about jazz that jazz had become a museum piece. This is a modern book. It just came out. I can't remember who wrote it, but it was in the Atlantic, or in the New Yorker. Jazz was a museum piece. I know you don't agree with that.
No, it's alive and well. I think, you know, how far we progress with the music or what direction it goes, that's up to young people like the ones you're hearing on the radio this morning. We certainly try to instill a respect for the tradition of the music, for playing blues, bebop, hard bop, but it's not limited to that. And even in our set this evening down at Town Hall, we're going to be doing a wide range of material from straight-ahead bassy blues to a very, very modern composition by Atsushi Aketa, who is a friend of Jay Thomas's. He wrote a tribute to Jay called Dear Pop Jay, and we're going to close our set with that.
All right, I'll tell you what. In a moment here, we're gonna listen to this song from these guys, a whole song. We've been getting some nice flavors of their performance, but let's do a whole song. Do you know what this song is going to be?
I know what it's going to be because it was in my head on the way in here this morning. We're going to call it the KU-Dub Blues.
Oh, very nice.
There you go.
That's Daniel Arthur, Luke Woodall, Lise Ramele, Peter Ramele, Storm D'Angelo, Noro Halpern, and Scott Brown, Roosevelt High School Jazz Band.
Yeah, KU Dub Blues. Scott Brown came to his head the tune just this morning. That was Lise Ramelli
on bass, Peter Romali on alto sax, Storm D'Angelo on tenor sax, Noah Halpern on trumpet, Luke Woodall on drums, Daniel Arthur piano, all members of the Roosevelt High School Jazz Band. Scott Brown is the director of the Roosevelt High School Jazz Band, award-winning jazz band. The Roosevelt and Ballard High School Jazz Bands performing as part of Earshot Jazz Festival tonight at Town Hall, 7 p.m. And Seattle Repertory Jazz Orchestra, you're in that.
Yes.
That's going to be November 3rd.
This Saturday and Sunday with Bradford Marsalis.
Yeah, that's cool. What do you play?
I'm the trombone.
Yeah, you're the trombone. That's kind of exciting.
Great. Yeah, it's really exciting.
So you have a career as a musician as well as an educator.
Well, I try to keep my feet in the water.
You must, after 29 years, there are students who come back to you who did not have that career, but come back to you. What do they tell you about what they gained from being in a jazz band?
Well, I think that sense of camaraderie and teamwork, working to create something that's beautiful, and having everybody be a part of that.
Yeah, yeah. Do you ever have people? I ever have people come back and say, "Well, I put down my instrument and now I'm picking it back up 20 years later, 15 years later."
Absolutely.
And what do you tell them?
Well, I'm just happy they stuck with it.
They stuck with it.
Sure.
How did you come to be here?
I went to the University of Washington. I'm a Northwest native. I grew up in Seattle, Dunlop Elementary School, and then went over to Bainbridge and came back across the water. And here I am.
And were you playing before you became the educator?
Yeah, I've gone through the high school or middle school band program. I'm just, I'm a band geek.
A band geek. You go to band camp.
Yep, absolutely.
Do you have any plans beyond that? 29 years, you could actually retire someday soon.
Oh, I don't know about soon. I love where I'm at. Roosevelt's just a great place to be. It's a wonderful community. There's so much left to do.
Like what?
Well,
you've done it all. You educated all these kids.
Oh, there's no such thing as done it all. You've got new kids coming in every year. We've got some freshmen that are amazingly talented. And so it keeps cycling on itself. And I become more and more connected to each new group of students that comes in, and it keeps me excited about the job.
Well, that's great. And you get to play with Bradford Marsalis every now and then.
Not too bad.
Not too bad. Scott Brown is the director of the Roosevelt High School Jazz Band. The Roosevelt and Ballard High School Jazz Bands are performing tonight at 7 p.m. at Town Hall, and Scott Brown is going to be at at Benaroya Hall. So what did you say, Saturday and Sunday?
Saturday and Sunday.
As part of the Seattle Repertory Jazz Orchestra with Bradford Marsalis. I appreciate you coming in.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And now.
This is the sound
of the week.
Sound of the week.
Today's sound of the day comes from our bicycle correspondent, Willie Weir, traveling in Bangkok, Thailand. Willie was walking along the canal near the Jim Thompson House, looking at the tiny little living spaces packed together in the shadow of huge residential businesses, shopping towers. And as he wandered, he heard this sound. At first, he thought it was a video game. Video game. Willie. It's a caged minor bird. That's what he heard. Willie and Kat are cycling around Bangkok. They're going to go up into Myanmar, and we're going to hear some reports from them. They can only send us their sounds every once in a while because, for some reason, Myanmar, not wired for the internet as much as you might have thought. No, I didn't think you thought it was wired at all. But we'll get some reports from them and some sounds from them as they make their way into that newly opened country. Open to the West, open to Americans. Again, what about sounds you're hearing? Record 30 seconds of it and send it to us, will you? Along with the story behind it. Email it to weekday@kuow.org. Put sound of the day in the subject line. Nick Bond joins us to talk about the weather at the end of the week, talk about what's happening in the weather and also what has happened in the weather. Nick Bond is the Washington State Climate climatologist. He works at the Joint Institute for the Study of Atmosphere and Ocean. Hello, Nick.
Hi, good morning.
I mean, just overall, this has been a week for incredible weather. Weather on the East Coast that's been astounding. Any thoughts on what you've seen?
Well, yeah, it definitely is a superstorm, and it's by some measures we haven't seen anything like it before, and of course the impacts on back east have been tremendous. I'm not sure if I should mention this, but actually another nor'easter is on the way next week. Nothing like Sandy, but it certainly is just going to kind of prolong the misery back there. And you know, we got to feel sorry for him about that. You know, here we just have to deal with a little rain. After a beautiful sunrise this morning, the sailors are probably going to take warning, and it's no big storm coming, but we should have some rain starting here late in the day. And continuing off and on at times during the weekend, the fire hose is mostly pointed at British Columbia, but we should get some of it, especially in the north part of the area and on Saturday night, but we might escape on Sunday.
Really? We'll escape a little bit of rain on Sunday?
Yeah, and then something kind of interesting in terms of weather change. I think you've probably noticed the temperatures have been really mild, especially at night.
Yeah.
And that is liable to change later next week. And we're getting into an overall pattern that actually resembles what can deliver snow to the lowlands of western Washington. Now, the source regions for our cold air are too warm. It's too early in the season for that. So I'd be really surprised if we got any cigar, but still, it's going to be quite a change in temperatures, especially in the at night.
They're not giving cigars out for rain, anyways, are they?
Yeah, that's right.
All right. So you, what's the record for the kind of rainfall we've seen? Is this it?
Yeah. Well, in terms of for the month as a whole, it was the fourth wettest, tied for the fourth wettest October we've had. And it's the most rain we've had in October since 2003. And that was after the first couple of weeks were completely dry. One thing that I was struck by was a kind of a stretch midweek of almost continuous rain here in Seattle. It started up about 2 a.m. on Tuesday, and with a couple of brief interruptions, rain till 7 p.m. on Wednesday. Every hour included rain, and that's 41 hours straight, which I don't know if that seems like a long time to you.
Yeah, that seems like a long time to me.
Yeah, it seemed like a long time to me, too. And so I looked up the record and see just how long it can rain continuously here. And it's looking back just the last 10 years, I found a stretch of 54 hours in a row in January 2009 where it rained without interruption. So we get these kind of prolonged rainstorms, 40 hours or longer, so about once or twice a winter, but still kind of unusual.
Wow. Well, let's not get it again, Nick, if we can.
Okay.
Nick Bond is the Washington State climatologist. He works at the Joint Institute for the Study of Atmosphere and Ocean. Thank you, Nick.
Yeah, thank you.
And a little more music from the Roseville High School Jazz Band to take us out this hour on Weekday.
Stick around for NPR News coming up next. Good morning. It's a minute before 10. I'm Andy Hurst.
Support for KUOW comes from the Irritable Bowel Syndrome Treatment Center, specializing in IBS, food allergies and sensitivities, celiac disease, and related digestive problems. Details on customized treatment options at IBSTreatmentCenter.com or on Facebook.
On election night 12 years ago, the
Thanks for listening. The program you just heard was made possible by the financial support of our listeners. Support this program and others like it by making a pledge today at KUOW.org.